we said before the news
mm-hmm.
that we will pick a town in Illinois, and if Chinese space station crashes in that town, I will have to buy free tacos. Taco Bell isn't throwing out the Mir space station. If it lands here, we buy the world free tacos. So we're just going to have to do it ourselves. And so I put up the maps on my computer, and I like spun it around a million times.
Keep your eyes closed?
I had my eyes open because I had to spin it, and Jess closed her eyes and pointed with her finger.
Oh, okay.
And she landed on Arlington Heights.
Okay.
If the probe crashes.
You're going to go broke. Arlington Heights.
Buying it for all of Arlington Heights. It means whoever is listening right now that remembers, hey, Matt said if it crashed in Arlington Heights, he'd buy me a taco. Then on the honor system, you're going to come by and I'll buy you a taco.
One taco per person.
Yes.
No cuts.
Exactly. So here's what's going to, if it does somehow land in Arlington Heights,
are you in trouble?
Yes. Suddenly a million people were listening to the show that night. How interesting.
Hello, dear.
Well, what we'll have to do is,
we're not going to Disneyland or Mexico this year.
Well, people are dying in Mexico anyways. It probably worked out well. No, what we'll do is, if it crashes in Arlington Heights, we will get a food truck, a taco truck.
Oh, yeah, one of the ones in the city, yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it from 2 to 5 a.m. We don't have to do a live remote. We'll do it right here. We get taco truck right there. There's no traffic.
Right in front of the Tribune.
Taco truck at the Tribune Tower. All of our listeners who want to swing by can go and get a free taco.
I'm in.
I'll do that. I'll rent a three-hour taco truck.
Look at you.
I will lose every dollar I ever made working here, but it'll be worth it.
I would be happy to help out. Financially.
You buy a couple of those tacos?
But no. But unfortunately, Uncle Sam...
I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a taco today.
Uncle Sam reached into my wallet on Wednesday, and
it's funny how Uncle Sam will do that. Chris Gebhardt is our dear old friend from NASASpaceflight.com. He's been on with us a couple of times. Jumps back on the phone with us this morning. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing good and better than your wallet might be doing in a week's time.
What is the odds? I know that, that it could land over the Midwest, and even if they say, yes, it's definitely landing over the Midwest, the chances of a piece of it actually landing in Arlington Heights, Illinois are, I have to have a better chance of winning the Powerball, right? I would think.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go ahead and roll the dice on that one.
Your wallet's safe. Yeah,
I would think so too.
Yeah, just like Taco Bell never had to pay up because Mir didn't hit that big floating, target that they had in the middle of the ocean for it. Yeah, I think you're safe, Matt.
All right, good. Well, and if not, boy, the publicity will just be grand, won't it? So let's.
And then I can say that I heard the offer go out.
You did. We'll fly you to town, Chris, to come have tacos with us and talk about it. And we'll get the family that found it in their backyard. So if a piece of this, so let's go back over the specifics again.
The rules.
Yeah. Not the rules. If a piece of it lands in Arlington Heights, everybody gets free tacos, whatever. But what is this thing? It's like it's the China's first space station. This was kind of a prototype that they didn't even run for very long before they shut it down, right?
Compared to other stations, you're exactly right. It was a prototype. It's called Tiangong 1. Its successor, Tiangong 2, is currently in orbit right now and in a very stable orbit. And it's all part of China's express goal of building a much larger space station, still something smaller than NASA and Russia's International Space Station, but something bigger and more permanent for them since they're not part of the International Space Station program. So this station was just a precursor, a way to help China learn how to dock with a space station, how to live for periods of time on it. And it served its purpose. And now it's coming back down to Earth, but it's used all of its useful propellant. So what makes it more interesting than some of the other satellites and objects that we deorbit very carefully every single year is we can't do that with this space station. So it's totally reliant on gravity and atmospheric drag to pull it back down into the atmosphere. And that's kind of hard to predict. because you don't have a specific target point that you're aiming for. So you're just kind of at the mercy of what's the atmosphere like on particular days, how much is the spacecraft tumbling, and that makes it incredibly difficult. Yeah.
Okay. So, and it's, I can't remember correctly. I don't think it's in the story I have. Is it 9 tons?
Roughly, it's, hang on, I can find that really, really quick. It's very, very small. It's not a, it's not at all a massive space station.
Right.
It's pretty much just the size of like a single module of the International Space Station. It's actually under 19,000 pounds.
Okay.
Total weight.
Under 19,000 pounds. So, yeah. So around 9 tons, right? That's right. 2,000, blah, blah, blah. Right?
I'm a writer. I don't do math. So
I believe 2,000 pounds is a ton. So times 9 is 18. So around 9 tons. So it's not.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and while that sounds like, well, 19,000 tons is a lot, in terms of things re-entering space, that's not that much, right? I think when we first talked about this a few months ago, it's like the 9th biggest thing to fall back to Earth. It's way behind Skylab and Mir and other things like that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And portions of those stations survived, which is why we have reason to believe that maybe some small pieces of this space station will survive. But even the pieces of Skylab and Mir that survived were quite small in relation to the whole station by the time they made it to the ground. Earth's atmosphere and objects traveling very fast, Earth's atmosphere has a very good history rate of destroying most of it before it makes it to the ground.
And the concern with this is, I want to say we talked about this before, wasn't it like parts of the engines, or there's some parts that are thought could survive reentry?
Yeah, so the parts that were mainly, and concerned is the wrong word, but the parts that have the potential to survive reentry are the heavier elements in the engine section of the station. So the engines being the most obvious one. And there's historical precedent for engines surviving reentry in some form. So that's why we think there might be a chance that something in the engine compartment survives, but, you know, the engines would only be, you know, at that point, we're only talking a couple hundred pounds versus the 19,000 pound total. So
sure,
it gives you a pretty good picture of how much of this we're expecting to completely burn up and not pose a threat to land.
But
engines are the big thing that we're worried about. Yeah.
If a couple hundred pounds of engine survived reentry and came down as one piece, that would be really bad if it landed in Arlington Heights, for example, which is a very populated area. I mean, that could still do a lot of damage, right?
It could, yes. A couple hundred pounds. The space station right now is going roughly 17,500 miles per hour orbital speed. And Earth's atmosphere will slow any piece that survives reentry down to a couple hundred miles per hour at most. It's not so much the speed that it will make it to the ground with, but the size. You're exactly right. Now, if anything does make it to the ground, there is the potential for damage to property, hopefully not any injuries. I think it's very worth while to mention that in the, 60 plus year history of space exploration and us launching things into orbit, there have been absolutely no confirmed cases of anyone being hit by space debris that's come back into the atmosphere.
So what you're saying, Chris,
includes the very,
you know what you're saying right now, you're saying we're due.
I wouldn't say that.
but it scares me that as you're saying, in 60 years, nobody's ever been hit by a piece of space debris. But there's tomorrow. And let's face it, in 60 years, how much stuff has come down?
That's why we're talking about it.
Yeah, and there's so much more stuff up there now, right? I mean, we're putting stuff up there every day. Yeah. And I know most of it is small and is going to completely burn up on reentry, but now I'm a little more surprised we're not talking more about this. The more you and I talk, I'm a little more surprised we're not hearing a little more about this, because Space Lab was talked about you know, a lot back in the 80s or Skylab, I'm sorry. And Mir was talked about quite a bit, and we're just kind of, this is really under the radar. And maybe that's the Stormy Daniels world we live in now, where this isn't big news, but I'm wondering why we're not a little more like, hey, this could hit the Midwest and a 200 pound piece of engine might crash to the ground at 200 miles an hour. That's going to be a really bad day for somebody if it's in their yard.
Yeah, well, so the reason this is a fairly big news story is specifically because it's not controllable. So you mentioned Skylab and you mentioned Mir, both of which were very large space stations by the U.S. and Russia that reentered. So Skylab's reentry was uncontrolled, just like this Chinese space station was uncontrolled. And portions of Skylab actually made it to the ground in Western Australia. But with Mir, we did a very controlled reentry of it. So the only major reason that Mir made headlines was because of the Taco Bell ad and because it was a pretty potent signifier of what was coming with international cooperation between NASA and Russia and the International Space Station. You know, we have thousands of objects up there, thousands of satellites up there, and we don't really talk about their deorbits. And I mentioned we deorbit, you know, many, many satellites every single year. But we do it in a very controlled manner where we bring them in very specifically over the ocean, away from known shipping routes, so that they pose absolutely no threat in case anything survives. And, you know, the thing with this Chinese space station is just not having any good estimate for exactly where overland it's going to come in yet. We do have a 4-day window, which has narrowed significantly since the last time we talked. Last time, I think it was a 9-day window in early April, and now it looks like it will be Easter weekend, either from Friday, March 30th through Monday, April 2nd, with April 1st kind of looking like the most likely day that this will come in. So Easter weekend could be interesting for a lot of people.
Yeah, especially all of us Christians, because, you know, there's going to be a lot of scuttlebutt if there's a fireball going through the sky on Easter morning.
You know, maybe sometimes space exploration likes to keep things interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. Why is China not part of that international federation? And why are the U.S. and Russia able to get along so well in that one area and China wasn't part of it? Were they not invited? Did they not want to at the time?
So it was more a question of in the wonderful world of diplomacy and international relations. China did not have a manned space program or a human space program at the time that the International Space Station contracts were being written and negotiated between the 16 member nations that are a part of it. Since then, China has expressed interest in joining the space station program, but they have thus far not been allowed to. So that's why they're pursuing their own space station program with the Tiangong 1 and follow-on space stations.
If this lands, say, in Arlington Heights, I have friends in Arlington Heights, say it lands in their backyard.
Yes.
150 pounds of space engine goes, what, 6-7 feet deep, I would guess, in their backyard grass? If it lands at 200 miles an hour, I would assume it's going to, you know, not just land and roll. So then they've got this thing in their backyard. Do they get to go, dude, sweet, get that thing up on eBay? Or what happens?
This is an excellent question. So if pieces of it do make it to the ground, you very first and foremost don't want to go near it. I mentioned earlier that it has used all of its usable propellant, but there are still other types of residual propellants that could be on board that if pieces of the engine section survive reentry, those propellants would be toxic to us. So you don't want to touch it. You first want to call local authorities and let them know what's happened, what you suspect has happened, based on where we will be able to predict somewhat that it'll come in at. And then you sadly don't get to keep it. Per the agreements that the spacefaring nations have with one another, if a portion of their spacecraft lands in another country, we have to give it back to them. And so sadly, you can't keep it or put it up on eBay.
Now, let me ask you a couple questions here. A, is China part of that agreement?
Because yes, they are.
And boy, that's interesting, because how do you think that would play out in court? Because I'll tell you what, if it lands in my backyard, I'm totally suing to get to keep it. I'm going to file injunctions and I'm going to say, well, Mr. Trump, I'm sorry, but if we're going to tariff their steel, let's not just give back the spaceship that they just put in my backyard.
Right. So, We have an example actually from one of the stations that we've been talking about earlier that we can look at about what happens if someone sues. So when Skylab came in over portions of Western Australia, there was a township in that part of Australia that didn't sue, but they fined NASA for littering, based on the fact that Skylab came down over their town. And NASA came and collected the pieces of Skylab that made it to the ground, said thank you, and left. And the U.S. government never paid that fine. So my answer to this that I've been telling people on Twitter is you are certainly free to try, but I wouldn't expect the lawsuit to go anywhere. If it just lands in your backyard, I wouldn't expect a lawsuit to go anywhere.
We should have paid that fine, though, don't you think? I think if our stuff lands in some other country, there ought to be something. I mean, so if it lands in my backyard, tears up a big hole in the sod, I have to call Allstate and say, you'll never guess what happened?
Pretty much, but here's where you could come in handy with that, because the fine in Australia for Skylab was actually paid years later. So Skylab came in 1980.
Okay.
And a radio station and a radio host in 2009 actually raised money from his listeners to pay the fine on behalf of NASA. So maybe there's a chance where you could get some people to pay whatever fine. If it lands in what was the name of the town?
Arlington Heights, Illinois.
Arlington Heights, yeah.
So, but why would I pay the fine? China should pay the fine. I'll pay the fine if we land some of our stuff in Australia again, fine. I'll raise money for that. I'm not paying off China's fine. They got to pay for it. Yeah, I'm already buying a taco truck. I can't pay for everything.
Well, you'll
have to do an interview with a Chinese radio station and talk them into raising the money.
There you go. There's an idea.
All right. So space age. So we think between March 30th and April 6th, but possibly Easter weekend. That's what you're kind of thinking.
March 30th and April 2nd.
So that's
Friday to Monday. Yeah.
March 30th.
Yeah. With April 1st right now. So the way we arrive at that window, that's actually a good point, is we have all the models that run based on how we know the station is tumbling, the rate at which it's falling per day. It's dropping in orbital altitude by about 1.5 miles per day. So based on that, based on how we know right now that it's interacting with the atmosphere, all of the models seem to indicate that April 1st is a good target. And then there's a day or two of uncertainty in there based on specific interactions with the atmosphere and how the spacecraft is tumbling. So that's how we arrive at March 30th through April 2nd, with April 1st right now looking like the most likely day that it will come in. And April 1st, not only April Fool's Day, but Easter Sunday.
Easter Sunday. And so at this point, because it's such a wide range, we have no idea whether it'd be daytime or nighttime. Right.
No, we don't. Now, this window will continue to narrow. So while we don't know daytime or nighttime just yet, what we can expect is the most likely scenario we will find ourselves in on Sunday, April 1st, if that date does hold for its reentry, is we will likely get a three orbit target of these are the most likely orbits at which time it will come in. Now, that doesn't mean it'll hit those three windows. We had those with Skylab, and Skylab came in outside of that three orbit target. But that should give us a much better indication of what land areas need to be in some way aware that this station could come in over top of them, and And that's about the best we're going to be able to do. We probably won't, unless we're extremely lucky in those three orbits, we probably won't get a good sense whether it'll be day or night until it actually happens.
How close will the watch be, though, at the end? Like you said, so there's, we'll narrow it down to like three different orbit passes that it could enter. Mm-hmm. And then, like, will we know when it's entering? Will scientists be trained on it and seeing it and saying, okay, looks like this is the one, it's low enough now, this is going to be the one? Like, would there be, say it was going to come in right over very populated areas of the U.S. and there was concern that, mm-hmm. hey, you should at least be aware. Will they have a good enough eye on it that there'll be kind of some warning sent out?
Well, we can hope for that. The reason I say we'll most likely get like a three orbit window will be based on the computer calculations. Now we are tracking it there. You know, we are continuously tracking it. We know where it is every single second. So what it'll really come down to is our tracking station's ability to recognize that reentry has actually begun, versus just losing it on the tracking stations and realizing, okay, it reentered and burned up, and that's why we lost it. So I wouldn't necessarily expect that we will have a, okay, this is the orbit, these are the areas, you know, specifically. I say probably the most we'll get is the three orbit warning, and it will be up to us to know the timing of those orbits. Like, the good thing about those orbits is we know where the station will be in every second of those orbits. So if, say, one of those three orbits does come over Illinois or other portions of the United States or any landmass, really, we will know the time at which to say, hey, if you're in this area, just be aware that at this time there is the potential for debris from the station to make it to the ground.
And whether it happens day or night, if it does happen over the Midwest, are we likely for a couple of seconds, even if it all burns up, to see a kind of a fireball go across the sky when it passes by?
If it's nighttime, you definitely will. If it's daytime and it's clear and you know exactly where to look, it's possible you could see it. But it's much more difficult to see a reentry during daytime. Yeah.
Huh. Can we just call up Bruce Willis and have him go up?
No, I wanted to make it to Arlington Heights. I really want to buy tacos.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I think it would be pretty cool. As long as nobody gets hurt. That's my one concern. There's a huge racetrack, like the biggest. There's a very famous horse racetrack in Arlington Heights, actually.
Yeah.
Arlington Racetrack, where they run the Arlington Million every year. Nice, big, wide open area. Could just crash land right there.
That'd be perfect, right that in the middle of the paddock. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on the grass. Yeah.
If there's time for one more quick thing,
please,
because I know there are people who are definitely, you know, concerned, and we all should be watching where this thing comes over. And we've talked about the potential of portions of it making to the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to stress how unlikely it is for someone to actually be injured in an event like this. It's certainly possible, but to give a good indication of why we're not panicking about this. So 15 years ago, when the shuttle Columbia tragically broke up over Texas, that was a quarter of a million pound vehicle. So much more, much heavier than this Chinese space station. And 33% of Columbia made it to the ground. So roughly the same size as the space station, and no one on the ground was injured, and there was very minimal property damage. And this occurred over, you know, the third or fourth most populous state in the United States. So, you know, there's always the potential, but
I don't want to be the devil on the shoulder, Chris, but yes, the third or fourth most populous state in the U.S., which is pretty much congregated in three major metropolitan areas, and then it's a huge open area, right? I mean, Texas is wide open land, and that's where it came down, right?
Well, but it did come down over populated areas. You know, it didn't come down over Dallas or Austin, but Columbia did come down over some populated areas and cities across Texas and Louisiana. So, and huge portions of Columbia's engine survived too, like we were talking about with the space station. So, you know, it is going to be a factor of where it comes in, but, you know, also a general reminder, Earth is 70% water. Yeah. So there's also a good portion that this will come in over water, but we talk about it just in case it comes in over land, so people are at least aware as much as possible of what could happen.
You just make me more and more nervous every time you say, you know, it's really unlikely anybody gets hit by this. That's never happened. It's, you know, most likely not going to happen. I could see us. They'll be playing that tape back when the person's like, I don't know what happened, but I was just standing outside because the guy on the radio said, don't worry, it's not going to hit anybody. And then, bonk, took me right on the head.
Well, that's why we say the odds of being hit, but we still talk about it.
Well, Chris, I don't know what you're planning on doing next Friday night, but if it hasn't landed yet, we'd love to get you back on the phone for a few minutes and talk about it. Because by this time next week, if it has not come in, we'll have it down to the three trajectories and three possibilities and really have a really good idea of what's likely to happen, right?
We will, yes. Yeah, because it'll be March 31st, yeah, so we'll be in the window. Yeah, if it hasn't come down by this point next week, yeah, we'll have a very good idea of when.
All right, well, either way, whether it has or hasn't, let's get you back on the phone to talk about what happened or what's about to happen and see if I'm going to be on the hook for some tacos, okay?
Okay, let's see, and I'm going to hold you to that, you know, getting me up there if you do end up having to buy tacos.
Where do you live, Chris? We don't even know. Are you in California somewhere?
I'm in Florida.
You're in Florida, okay. Well, you're near Orlando, near Tampa, where are you near?
Near the Space Center. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll set up the flight. When the taco truck is here, we'll have you up here for it. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com. We'll check in with him next week to see where Ting Dong 1 is coming down.